What's up, everyone, and welcome down to another episode of Zetro's Toxic Vault. And you know what's great is being a musician is I get so many cool musicians coming through. And it's not just all Bay Area guys, especially as you've noticed, we've tried to kind of go outside of the box of Bay Area guys. And actually, I got one from, who's not even, has nothing to do with Bay Area thrash, finally. But it definitely has an amazing track record as a drummer, playing with the Black Star Riders now, and so much more that we will talk about. Mr. Chad Zaliga, welcome.
Thank you for Zetro's Talks.
Good to have you in, man.
Thank you.
How's everything going?
It's great, man. It's good to be in the Bay, man.
It's good to be in the Bay, isn't it?
Out of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it doesn't snow here. It's great. That's the thing about
that. It's not too hot.
I don't know if I could ever live kind of back east because I'm just not a snow guy. In fact, my kids to this day fucking piss and moan that you never took us to the snow. It's like, you know what? I'll take you to the beach. I won't take you to the snow. I don't like to be cold.
I have a lot of friends that when I call them and I go, what's going on? Oh, I'm at the beach. I'm shoveling snow.
Shoveling. Or no, when, who was that? We were on tour with Slayer and one of their crew guys lives in Cleveland and he was bragging about his new snow plow thing and was like, I don't know, 5 horsepower, 8 horsepower.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck that is. And he was all happy because he just got a new snow blower thing. I guess it.
Yeah, that's snows. I'm originally from Cleveland, so I'm very familiar with the snow blower. It's the holy grail for us for the winter.
Holy shit. It just driving and getting out and walking into shit and slipping and just the whole wet.
If it's going to be cold, here's my philosophy on cold over there on the East Coast. If it's cold, it should snow. I don't like the slush, that sleet, that nasty stuff that like, it's just, it's a mess. Or black ice, which gets really dangerous. But snow, I'm fine with. It's cool. But
we don't get that here in where we did.
And if you did, it would probably be like.
Central's Toxic Vault. And there's no slush, there's no slice. Our cars don't have the undersides of them corroding from all the salt that you have to put on the roads.
Very true.
So, you know, a lot of people don't see that. But me, you know, I've been very fortunate enough to cruised the country many, many times, and I was like, at first I was like, hey, how come those all like, oh, I didn't even think about it, and somebody says, well, they put snout
roads are destroyed.
Roads are destroyed.
Completely destroyed from the corrosion.
That's our touch on the world's weather view.
Weather
from
channel.
Pennsylvania to, we're going to change the channel. When we get back to music, let's talk about you, man. You have such a great track record. I mean, the bands you have played with are all stellar. I mean, the band you're with now is if you ask anybody, especially as old school fucking guys, Black Star Riders is basically Thin Lizzy. Well, because it's Scott Garam, you know, which is the final member, and then obviously Ricky Warwick, and he's from I remember him from the '80s from the Almighty.
Yeah,
you know, very, you know, and I keeping that Irish kind of tenure strong in the band. But you have a lot of other history, and I know what about your first band, but talk about growing up. We were talking before the cameras went on, and you were saying that you, 2 years old, you started playing the drums.
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. Talk, I mean, I wouldn't say I was a prodigy on the kid, but I did start at 2 years old. My father was in the Cream and all that, and he would play music, and he still to this day they play music all the time in the
so
house.
So then that's how you got it as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Yeah, and I think that a lot of people have a lot of guests I've had in the past. I always ask that question, and a lot of them say, you know, what they were listening to the '60s sound at that. Well, for me, it was you know, the '60s sounds. Guys my age, you know, my dad was a biker, so he listened to Allman Brothers and Zeppelin and Sabbath. So that was normal for me to listen to that stuff. Was your dad a musician or your mom a musician by any?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. So my whole family, like my grandfather, he played with Tommy Dorsey.
Wow.
Playing trombone.
How neat.
So I grew up, believe it or not, all the rock bands that I've been in, I'm not a rock drummer. I'm a jazz funk guy. But it all, if it's good, it's good, right?
Sure. If it's got groove, right?
That's the way I look at it. So grabbing the big band from my grandfather, and then my mom was classically trained. She was a flautist, and you have to say flautist, obviously. Flautist, and she was going to play for the Cleveland Orchestra, but she had me. So she got into more of the music
teaching. So you
teaching.
Fucked it all up.
I destroyed it.
Fucked
completely
it all up.
Wrecked that dream. Bye, Mom.
Wow. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, sorry, Mom. And then my father was just kind of a hobbyist of just playing drums. Never took it serious, never like studied rudiments or anything like what drummers do. But he had this passion of just watching him drum at early ages, of watching him jam to Cream songs. And I remember him very, you know, 2-3 years old, teaching me Indigata Davita's drum solo. And at that age, you don't know what he's doing, but you're hearing this thunderous
How
stuff.
How many instruments
going on.
Could he play?
Just drums.
Oh, he could just
play
drums.
Yeah, drums. My grandfather played trombone, and my mom played flute. And now she plays everything, basically. But
amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, was he a more of a teacher to you, or just kind of a directioner, kind of going, you know, hey, it's really cool, son, because I play this, and I want you to play this, and you picked it up, like, wow, at 2 years old, I'm like, by four,
You're playing a beat, exactly,
and it's something that you're thinking, you know, all the other kids in school are, you know, playing with their little video things, and you're going home to play drums. Is that how it was, or was it?
It was, you know, so long ago. I remember my father buying me a kit. My dad was not a teacher, but my dad was a role model for me of just something about those drums sounded cool, and the way he played, he kind of had his own style, like a Ginger Baker. I knew it was my dad when I heard him. I could hear all drummers when I got older. But Ginger Baker was his guy, and my dad was just the guy that just put on music, jam it kind of thing. And that's where we shared that bond. But never was in a cover band. He would play on his steering wheel all the time, driving when we go on vacation or something.
So he never actually sat and played in a Tuesday night jam night with anybody?
I don't think he's ever played with anybody, like even like you and I jamming with friends at school.
Really?
Yeah, he said at college he would play like, you know, all the classic great rock bands, and he would just put on his turntable or A track or whatever it was at that time and just air drum or play on like a pizza box, but never took it serious. He became a chemist.
So what's his take on it that he's instilled this into his son, and his son has taken it to, I mean, I don't care if you've played with who you've played with and done the things you've done. You in the business, on the phone. If I hit you on Wikipedia, your name's there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Done deal. You know, so what's his reaction to that?
I think that they would have been proud of me of anything I've done. They never forced drums on me, like go in there.
But this is a hard
practice.
Thing to do, Chad, to become a musician Beyond. That tours, that tries to keep it financially together, believe me, and be able to make a living of it and keep rolling and go from one act and maybe to another act and then to another act. You know what I mean? There's a lot of that happens, you know, and still come out smelling like a fucking rose. You know, I think that there's a lot more to it than just going to like a university and getting a fucking degree, man. There's just as much work into it.
Our job is harder.
I agree.
Because, I mean, you're an icon, whether you believe it or not, because you're still doing it. You know,
fortunate to be doing it. Thank you, fans.
And
we love you for
it. We know you're 21 years old, but you've been doing it for a while, and you've seen everything known to man.
I think so.
And I would say more life experiences than book smart you would be.
Oh, definitely.
And
definitely.
To me, that's the most important trait to have as one, a musician and a human being to move around through society.
Yeah, book smart doesn't make you sense smart. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
So you may not, but I feel that as well. Just with my upbringing, the way I was brought up and stuff. But when did you have a drum set? When did you 2 years old or
3 or 4?
3 or 4. You had a drum set.
And I remember my dad got it from our neighbor across the street, and I was super excited to finally play something. And he starts playing Indigata Davita, and he's like, and destroyed the heads, and I didn't even get to play it. So I'm crying. I'm like, Dad, I want to play my kit. And he was like, oh, sorry. And he didn't know.
Were the actual real heads, or was it one of those
toys? Yeah, dude, believe it or not, it kind of went full circle with me, because at a time I signed with DW, but it was called a Camco kit. Uh-huh. And Camco was DW back in the day before it was called DW. DW bought the rights later on. But it had those sucker lugs, no bottom heads. Actually, when kits really were kits, before all the Tinker Toys and stuff on it.
Sure.
This was an actual beat-up looking kit, but it sounded authentic and that vintage sound. And my dad put the holes in it, and I was like, now what am I going to do? This was my first kit. And then we bought some heads later down the road. But I think what really made me the drummer I am today was I was very fortunate and blessed to have great parents that would provide anything that I needed. If I needed a kit, they would buy it. But they were the kind of parents that, let me see what you're going to do before I put the money down.
Uh-huh.
So I would play on pillows. I'd play on, you know, on my knees. I'd play on pots and pans. And I think back in the day, I'm a little bit younger, but back in the day, there was not social media. There wasn't YouTube.
Of course.
There was nothing. And to me, I think in my era, in Take your training. Era, you know, I think music was more true, was more real to the lyrics, to the musicians itself. I mean, when I had to learn, I had to watch VHS tapes. And to just learn, like, positions of drummers, I had to hit pause and play. Yeah. Now you can slow the frame rate down. Sure. And it's like, goo, goo. It's all spelled out. We had to work for it. And I think music today is, it's easier. And life is easier. Where we were like, what are we going to do? My girlfriend's life. Parents think I'm a you know, a homeless guy because I want to be in a rock band.
Right.
And same probably for you. But it's like, but no, you're going, you have a goal. You're trying to achieve that goal. You're marketing yourself. You're trying to be better at your craft.
Of course.
You study. You listen to bands. You write lyrics. You become a poet. So really, how are you homeless?
Yeah.
You're doing college.
Right.
But it's not college.
Right.
You're drinking. You're you know.
You're actually thinking outside of the box. And that's the way I explain it. If mm-hmm. you're not going to a trade or college for a degree to do engineering or whatever, becoming right. an EMT, becoming a fire to cop,
absolutely.
Whatever, it's thinking outside the box. Actors don't all of a sudden become actors. They had to start somewhere.
Absolutely.
Playing at the playhouse in their town or whatever and mm-hmm. doing 10 plays a year and then getting one. I mean, it's the same thing with a musician, you know what I mean? So we're constantly, I call it, and I always applaud people who are thinking outside the box. Because
always, yep.
All of the people that don't, you wouldn't have anything to entertain you if those of us didn't go. And nobody gets yeah. paid out of the game. There's nobody that came up to you and said, Chad, I say we make him a rock star. Yeah, we're going to make you a rock
right.
star. And you're going to play the drums. And basically, yeah. yeah, we're going to get you some bands. They're going to know of your bands and stuff. You're going to, you know, you're going to work at it, but that's going to, and that's where you're going. What do you think, guys? Everybody? Yeah, yeah, okay, Chad.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. There's nothing. It's luck of the draw. It's talent. It's timing. It's a bunch of different things that go
it's
along with
it. It's
a
lot of different equations.
It's so many.
A lot different of different, things. I mean, I'm sure
you mentality. It's everything.
I've been doing it for 25 years professionally and super blessed for that, but I think you've heard this story. How do you get signed? And I go, well, if you know, let me know, because I don't know.
But even signed doesn't guarantee shit.
No, they think we drive Porsches.
It's like, oh, you're signed?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, so the minute you sign, oh, yeah, your bank account, it goes to 7 digits right away. Nobody knows where the money comes from.
But yeah.
It's in the deal. Oh,
yeah,
my God. Yeah, right?
We buy Ferraris, right? Right when
they
we sign the dotted line.
That anything that the label gives you, you pay back, people.
It's a bank. It's a loan with
they
the
go,
Virgin Records.
If your record costs this much to make and the tour is going to cost this much and the posters yeah. to sell that tour and the ads in the magazine cost this much, you pay for that, people. You do. And so it's like...
I agree.
Your $80,000 video that you shoot with in the end... That comes off of your record sales. You pay for it. The label doesn't go, love these guys. Let's just give them all this and give them a year. They're in business. Business.
Or your record starts doing really well, and you're the coolest thing since sliced bread. But then they go, what do you need? We want to take you out to dinner. And all that stuff's gravy. But when you start writing a song that doesn't do well, You're a has-been.
Oh, I believe me. I explained that a certain way, which we'll do an episode about one time because I was explaining it to Chad. We won't get into it right now, but it's kind of a progression that I've seen, and I've seen all three. And so, okay, so let's fold forward your first performance. Where was it? As a drummer, what time the first... Come on, you had to play some fifth grade fucking...
Oh, I did some dumb
but
stuff.
One that you remember, that you can remember, first time on stage, first band... first time you performed in front of people, basically, is what I'm looking for.
I want to say the first time I ever performed was I was studying with a guy named Bob Brimmer, drum teacher of mine, at a music shop. He kind of introduced me to a guy named Sean May, and we put this little band together. I think we were like 15 or 16, and we played this thing called the Potato Fest. And
where is this at? And what year
this
was
this? This is in Amherst, Ohio, which Amherst is like 20 minutes from Cleveland.
Okay.
And... just
so we're
out
talking
the
about
outskirts.
1992, 93?
No, we're talking like 80s and like 80s. 80. I was born in 76, so like 85, 86, 87-ish.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit, maybe.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Because I graduated in 96. So it was the Potato Festival, and our band was called Final Renaissance. And we've all had that band where you're like, oh, God. I hope that never surfaces.
Me and Phil Demo, Phil.
Yeah,
played
Phil's
in our
sweetheart.
First band together. We have that name as well. Metal Warrior.
Yeah.
It's
like mom names. You know, like your mom. What do you think the band should be called? Steel Web. All right. I won't ask you ever again to come up with a band name, you know, but really, if you think about it, a name for your band is like a tattoo. And you hope you get cool tattoos because you're going to explain it down the road later going, well, I was drunk and I was at a party and someone just started. It's like the band name kind of does that. It's like it lives with you for the rest of your life.
Well, not necessarily. Not if you can get rid of that band name. I've been fortunate enough
I don't know how you
to
get
be labeled with the one I'm labeled with. I'm quite fortunate with, I mean, you know, it, if you looked at it that way. But some people may not. Be so, oh no, don't, no, not with that band. No, I was with, you know what I mean?
I'm kind of that guy. I'm like,
Well, we're going to talk about those bands. We're going to get into that. So, talk about your performance. Who was it in front of?
So, it was just, you know, in front of, it was like kind of like the festival, like a fair kind of thing. And people just walking by. But I was a huge Rush fan.
Nobody stopped to stop to hang and to watch.
They did. They would kind of do their thing. I think. When you see a kid play, you're mesmerized.
I think so, too.
And I try not to do that now and go, he's really good at 17. I want to say, he's all right. He has a lot more growth. But when you see those ages and what they can do at that age, you're like, wow, he's really good. And I think that's kind of what the crowd was like. Wow, these kids are actually, they're playing YYZ. You know, they're pretty good. And it was just cover stuff. And I think we tried to write some horrible, horrible arrangements of originals. But that was
they're
my
always
first.
Horrible, and
they always are.
If they're not horrible, then who do you think you are? You know what I mean? They better be horrible.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, it's like it's art, right? It's whatever you create from nothing, which I've always been fascinated by. Like, you just sit there with your band guys and go, "Okay, who's gonna start it?" And then before you know it, you have this song, this song that can help people with their lives. And then you write in the right lyrics. I mean, you have a really important responsibility because...
Well, believe me, I've heard that over the last 35 years. There's many times where fans have like said, you know, Zetro, there was a guy, you know, a good friend of mine committed suicide. And he left suicide note. This is in 90. And I wrote a song about it on Force of Habit. It was called Good Day to Die. And a lot of people were like... Wow, man, that song is really deep, and it really helped me through a time. Or then I'll hear, wow, Toxic Waltz, dude, it was when I was rowdy and I was 15, right. And I needed to get crazy. And, man, that song, I'd turn that on. My mother would tell me to turn it down, and I'd turn it up. So I know what you're talking about when it comes to that, you know, to that feeling of fans, because I'm a fan, and you're a fan.
And you can't pay for that. It's something that you can't tell a fan to like your music. They're going to be honest. Like our bro Eric, he was always honest with the bands I played with. And I value that because they're the ones that are going to be paying my paycheck. And when you hear those suicide stories or you hear it helped me, you know, get away from my girl or this or that.
Yeah.
Dude, that's like And it puts a lot on your soul. You could be the baddest ass guy, power lifter or anything. Everyone has a heart to a certain degree, sure. You know? And we bleed all the same way. And when you hear those stories and you're like, wow, I wrote those lyrics and people really feeling what I'm feeling. Or you write it about something, like say you're playing Super Mario Brothers and you just got this like, I gotta go write. And you're writing about a video game. But then someone gets it in a different way. Or you write lyrics and they take it and they make it, you're a monster.
Oh, sure. Oh, we've heard that many times.
And I'm sure every metal band. Content.
I'm sure. I think that's the stamp on metal that's probably the biggest myth in the world. That you look at metal guys and go, oh my God, are we going to fight? There's going to be trouble. There's never trouble.
They worship the devil. Yeah.
They worship the devil.
I was that guy. I mean, I'm a Christian, and I was that, like, put those people in a box and judge them because they have long hair. Yeah, right. They have tattoos.
Tattoos.
And then I become that guy.
On their back, exactly. You know? Think about that.
And then when I hear the devil word, like, I remember, funny story, my neighbors were playing Running with the Devil, and I knocked on their door and said, you're going to hell.
Oh, nice.
And he's now real great friends with me and his daughter and son were bust my balls all the time because we were these Christian people and I'm smashing Metallica records with a sledgehammer, right?
You're listening to this, guys. Are you getting this?
And I'm speaking on behalf of a Christian of how dumb that's we how they, do stuff.
That's the tunnel vision that they have. You know, in my eyes, like if I go to a concert and there's some guy screaming on a blowhorn that I'm going to have. I'm sure you've seen them at your own shows.
I was that guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you need to be
yelling at people like that. It's like, number one, don't you think your family would more benefit from you being at home, spending time with them? Number two, do you think you're going to really get across holding signs, being absolutely outraged? Is that doing God's work? Does that make you feel, if God is your thing, does that make you feel
absolutely
that you're doing? I've always wanted to walk up to them and say, what are your kids doing tonight? Wouldn't they want mom to be home? You know what I mean? Why are you wasting your time? These are not bad people that are walking into this concert because they like a certain type of music. Why do you have to be so naive? And I've never done that because they're so arrogant. And it's like, I don't think because you're a Christian that you have to be righteous on people. You know what I mean? And
I think they try to be more rock star.
I don't know their angle. I'm just thinking, if you really thought of the mentality, you have 15 to 20,000 people that are going into a venue and you're screaming from a bullhorn with maybe five or four other people standing out there holding. It's not huge numbers. And they're holding signs going, you said Ozzy Osbourne believes in Satan.
Right.
Ozzy Osbourne is Satan. You know what I mean? Black Sabbath isn't. You're all going to hell. He bet you could come to our site. And the guy's screaming and he keeps saying the same thing over. And I feel sorry for them people.
I do too, because I was that guy. And outside looking in, after doing this for so many years and being around so many people, and myself being a Christian and hanging with the Satanist, they're still people.
I agree.
They can do what they want to do. It's not my job
to
convert him to Christianity.
I agree.
It's through my actions. And if he wants to ask me, hey, you're so happy all the time, and I'm in this dumps, I'll talk to them,
right.
But I am not that Bible-thumping people because those Bible-thumping people use those fear tactics to try to bring you into heaven, and that's not how it would work in real life.
See, when I was a kid, that's why I'm not religious,
by the way. A lot of people that become that way.
And I'm not religious, by the way, and because of the whole, well, if you don't believe in Jesus Christ or God, Stephen, you're going to burn in hell. When you're a kid, you're going, I don't want to burn it.
It's the most terrifying thing.
Right. So you scared me into that. And then when I was able to do my own, you know, deductions and choose my own path.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And see what worked for me. And I think that's what's good about humanity. Anyway, we're getting off on that shit. Let's get back to you and playing rock drumming. So talk about the first time that you got paid to play, if you can remember that. And I don't care. I don't care if some guy gave you each $10, you know what I mean, to get together, or it was your first major gig and you walked out of there with $100,000 and you were like, yeah, this is the life for me.
I think it was I played a bowling alley when I was 19. I didn't start making money until I was 19, 20. I think it was 19, and we played a bowling alley called Striker's Lane. And
this is in Pennsylvania?
No, this is... I'm originally from Cleveland. Okay. I've been in PA now 13 years.
Okay, so your formidable years. Yeah. You were definitely in... You were.
I was in...
Ohio.
Good old rock and roll capital of the...
Yeah. Oh, my.
Yeah, oh, my.
Boy, do they fuck our type of music, huh? But... Let's get back to the...
That's another story.
Oh, my.
So, I think we made like $20 a piece, and I thought that was the coolest thing. $20.
Okay, how long did you play for?
I did an hour and a half. We had other bands play with
us. Originals, or was it...
Oh, of covers, of course. Covers. Maybe a couple of hated
$20 at 19 originals. To play all covers? Dude, you're living the dream. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and I thought we were on our way. I was like... And I think every band I was in, I was telling my parents, this is the band. This band's going to take me all the way. They're like, yeah, all right, that's 20 bands you've said that already. So poor parents had to hear that every, this is the band.
Now joining, actually, because I read something that your first kind of real band was pretty much Breaking Benjamin, right?
Successful. Like,
that's what I mean. Yeah. Where mm-hmm. you got notoriety.
Absolutely.
When people now... You're playing in front of 60,000.
Absolutely.
You're high up on the bill. Mm-hmm. People, you're in the bigger dressing rooms, not the littler ones.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So I read that you turned in an audition tape on VHS.
I kept it old school.
And okay, this is like what, 2003 or 2005?
There were DVDs.
I was just going to say, I don't even think I had a VCR even up to then, right?
That's what... Ben said to me, he's like, I had to go in my closet and find my VHS or VCR to watch your VHS tape. But I think
that's great that he took the
time and gave it, you know. And you know, they say those things happen for reasons kind of thing. It was that kind of thing, because there were DVDs out, but my ex-wife was like, why don't you just play it like a show? Back to back, and I was still learning these songs as I was recording. I didn't know who Breaking Benjamin was, but I heard it's a pretty big band. So I was like, all right, I'm going to learn these songs right quick. So I started learning them, played them, and she's using a camcorder, not the one on the with the microphone. I wish I had that. That would have been
from European Vacation.
That would be
Chevy took it on the road. Come on,
awesome.
Sure wasn't that one?
Check out Wally World. So
exactly,
it was one of those handheld ones, and my bro, once I did the video, converted it, but he didn't have his DVD burner or whatever those things were at the time. So he had a VHS. I hooked it right up to it, put a old tape, and I went, I don't know what people are going to think. Now, every audition that the drummers did for Breaking Benjamin was a DVD. And you could just click on it to the next song, to the next song, to the next song. Mine was like...
Didn't have to
rewind,
stop, back a little bit.
Yeah, but it also showed there were no hidden technology.
Right.
How many times did he play this song?
Right.
And in my VHS thing, my pedal breaks in the song called So Cold, which was their single doing really well on the radio. And my foot on my right foot flips over and starts playing my left pedal. And I got the gig because of that. I didn't stop. And... I had a little
thank
PA.
Thank you, VHS.
Yeah, thank you, VHS. The PA was clipping that it was so loud and the drums were vibrating the CD player. CD player, remember that. Not streaming iTunes, CD player. And it was skipping. So every time I play, it would skip, but I keep playing. So I was in a live setting that this was my audition. And that's how I got the gig.
Wow. What did that... How many other drummers went up against you?
Bunch. I think there was 100? Like 12, 13,
oh,
14.
13,
but like in, like, you're talking BC from head PE, like that caliber and stuff like that.
Wow. And so how long after did you send the tape did you get, and how did you find out the information?
Well,
who told you? Did you get a call?
It's a good.
No, this ain't him. Bullshit. Fuck you. Quit fucking with me.
Yeah, that's a good question, because what happened was we network as musicians once we get to a certain level, right?
Damn right we do.
So I was in this band called Switch back in the day, and we toured for a while, and the band did decent. We were on a Mortal Virgin with Korn and Incubus, so I was like, wow, that's a pretty big label if you're on that.
And they're so, doing volumes of units, so that's, you know.
At that time, yeah.
Sure.
And so once the band kind of broke up, I made connections with all the endorsees that I was with at that time, which was like, you know, Yamaha and Vader drumsticks. And I was working in the factory at that time, and I just would call up the guy named Chad Brandolini, who was the A&R for Vader drumsticks. And I said, hey, if you know any band that's losing a drummer, please mention my name. I need to get out there. He's like, dude, you're a killer drummer.
That's usually how it works, too.
Yeah.
I've heard that a lot.
And believe it or not, a couple months go by, nothing. I'll call one more month, third month. He's like, actually, Breaking Benjamin just lost their drummer. They're having auditions. I'll give you the drum tech's number that, and you can give him a call. And I just called him right away. Hey, I don't know you. You don't know me. But I heard there's an audition. And he's telling me, like, what I need to do to get the gig. Because I sounded cool to him, I guess. And we just hit it off on the phone. He's like, you sound like you can play. I know you from Switch. You'd be perfect for this band. So long story short, I did the VHS tape. But I had my ex-wife play on it just to be dumb. And be like, now my audition. And so they call me like a week later and go, here's the deal. And I'm driving from my horrible job at the factory going home, and I get a phone call. And I remember this like yesterday, and I'm at the red light, and he goes, we tried all these different drummers, and we finally picked the drummer, and I just want to say it's not you, but you were really, really, really good, but we want to go with your wife. And I went, This better be ball busting right now, because I will drive into incoming traffic.
Hazing is normally right out of the gate.
Absolutely.
Hazing is normal.
And they were like, no, we're just joking with you. You got the gig. And I was like, what? And I'm going through red lights like Grand Theft Auto style. God. I'm like, I felt invincible at that time. Like, maybe this is where I'm going to be. And it's just going to get bigger and bigger from there. And, you know, later down. It just blew up.
It did blow up very, yeah, very much so.
Very blessed that it did the way it did.
So you did 8 years with that band, right?
Yeah. Almost 10.
Almost 10.
Yeah. With hiatus kind of taking its course, and Ben and I still talking through that hiatus, so I consider it almost 10 years, yeah.
Are you still cool?
No. But, you know, I think we come at our age where bygones be bygones. And
so if you were put in a backstage bat, we would be civil.
I would. Now, yes.
Now.
Yeah, I would. Because, I mean, I still care for the guy. I can't blame him for the incidents or myself. It was just stupid immaturity and opening my mouth, saying the wrong words. But I had to stick up for myself. But it's the business that kind of jades you. And
of course it does.
It makes you a monster, and then you think you're a monster on your football team's stealing the football and making the other team win, and you're like, what? Why would you do that? And it's like, you just think everyone's your enemy at that time. And you can probably, I can't preach to the choir, but, man.
And believe me, in every way, shape, and form.
You don't know who's your friend.
In every way, shape, and form.
You know?
You want people that you think, especially when we were kids in the 80s, and, you know, Exodus was, you know, a very big band as the first and second and third records came out.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a growing period, and we didn't know how it paid. And boy, did they take advantage of that. And I was like, you know, like 1.4 years down the road, I was like, how much money do we got? You know what I mean? It's like, what do you mean we don't got any money? Our shows are sold out. Everybody wears our t-shirts and stuff. Our records sell. How do we not have any money? You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, well, you use the underflapper on the other, and you guys did that. And it's like, whoa, really? It's like, really?
I just watched a thing a while back on YouTube where it's that you sign up for, I don't know, a month, and you can watch the YouTube kind of specials and stuff. And I think it was Lou Pearlman on NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, the story, the like the dirt story, and Lance did like the narrating and everything and put this kind of all together, I believe.
And so it's kind of like the dirt of those guys.
Dude, you think we had it bad? Like,
well, I've heard about that because
it
I heard
is
those guys,
so heart
own the shit. You know what I mean?
And well, he put these bands together,
right?
Right, and as he was putting these bands together, he's funding out of his own pocket.
Sure he is.
He's taking you and I to Ruth Chris.
Right.
And you're like, wow, this guy's loaded, man. Like, this is the way it's supposed to be. And then they blow up, both bands, but they're not getting paid. And they're selling out arenas.
Stadiums.
Yeah. Arenas and stadiums. And they're not getting any money. So Lou says, let's go and we're going to all meet at Ruth Chris. I'm going to give you your checks of your...
what I owe you.
Basically owe you. And so they all sit down. And Lance is talking about this. And he's like, so, yeah, I remember our parents are at the table. We're all having dinner. And we cannot wait to open these envelopes. And they open it. And they go, whoa. Like, they were just beyond, like, this is a joke. He's busting balls. I think they made like $6,000 a piece or some stupid number. Like, you have to watch it. And
really?
He's like, listen, or 50,000 or something like that. But they were selling 20 to 30 million records, number one on every,
sure,
you know,
every,
like,
radio station that pays for that.
$50,000 should not be in that check. Add some more zeros. So, watching this, and he's talking, and then he finds out that all this money that they didn't get is going to his bank account because he funded and took them all the dinners and charged them for all those dinners.
I bet he did.
And you're
like,
just
we
like,
go back to like we were talking about earlier. You pay for it. The record label, come on in.
If it's too good to be true, it is.
So after the 8 years went down, you actually got a really good gig. Right after that, we respect this man. He played in Black Label Society. Talk about how you got that audition and going into that.
Again, just networking. Basically, I'm good friends with a guy named Will Hunt, drummer. He played for Scrape. I don't know if you remember that band. Yeah. He's in Evanescence now. He was in a band called Dark New Day. And he's like me. He goes and does people's roofs. And he goes to the next job when he needs to go to the next job. So he was playing with Black Label. And I get a phone call at 3-4 in the morning. And he's like, yo, bro, it's Will. I'm like, yo, what's going on? And he's like, what are you doing right now? And usually when Will calls me and says, what are you doing right now? I know it's a gig, and I don't know if I want the gig because I only got two, you know, hours before I have to fly out to do the gig.
Of course.
So, but he trusts me, and he values our relationship where I would never screw him or I'll be honest with him. So he calls me up, and he's like, yo, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm about to go to bed. What about you? He's like, well, I'm overseas right now. I'm playing with Black Label, and I, you know how I'm with Evanescence? I go, yeah. He goes, well, I got to go back. Because I was under a contract. And I told the band, I'm not going to be here permanently. I have to go back when she says off of her hiatus, I'm going to go back and write. So that's what he did. He says, I need you to fill in for me. And I go, with who? And he's like, Black Label. And I go, you mean Zach Wilde? Like, I'm terrified of these guys. They're like biker guys and stuff. And I'm not that looking kind of biker kind of guy. I got blonde hair, maybe some tattoos. I look like a guy in Backstreet Boys. And he started laughing and he goes, you'll be fine. Trust me. It's real easy stuff. I play it all the time. They'll love you. You'll get along with the bass player. Great. Cool.
Yeah, great dude. They're great.
Awesome.
I know.
Awesome
that.
People.
Yes.
Right?
We've run across them many times.
Such a friendly family.
Yes.
So, anyways.
Zach is a fucking...
a legend. He's a goofball.
He's a pisser.
He is.
He's a pisser. I love that
kid. I love
kid.
That, man. Yeah. Taught me a lot. But so, I get a phone call 5 hours later, and I'm working on these songs. Like, all right, I know Stillborn. That's a simple song. What's the next song? Oh, because I've been doing this for years, right?
Sure.
So I just hear the drum beat, but I also listen to the lyrics, the melody, guitars and bass, because if I can't hear something on stage, I can sing the melody and get through the show, because that's why I get paid. So I get a call and he goes, yo, Johnny Kelly's just going to finish it. He plays for, you know, Typo Negative. He's just going to finish the run. I'll call you if anything else happens. I'm like, oh, here's my... Now, I'm not playing with anyone at this time. I'm still with Breaking Benjamin, but we're on hiatus. So I'm not making income like everyone thought I was making. So I'm like, I need a gig. That was my opportunity. So I get a phone call from our label, and this guy that used to work for our label works for this band called Our Cast. Well, we took him out with Breaking Benjamin, and they're like, what are you doing right now? And I go, I'm just sitting home. They're like, well, cool. This drummer guy has some issues that he has to take with court. He's going to pay you, and he's really wealthy. He's going to pay you to fill in for his band, and he's going to take good care of you, and you're going to go on tour with Black Label. And I went, wait a minute. I'm going to open up for the band I was supposed to play for. So we do this tour. I bond so much with JD and Nick Cannonese. Yeah. I mean, we were like brothers.
JD's great.
You know, he's just a funny dude. So sure, we connected. I'm like, I want this gig now.
Right.
These are my bros. And now JD's like, we already got a drummer, Mike Froch, playing right now. He's a great drummer, but he's just not, I'm not vibing on him. So I want you to be the drummer. So it kind of crossed paths again. And then finally, they got rid of Mike Froch, and they wanted me to be the drummer. And that's how I got the gig, in a nutshell.
How long after the tour that you guys were you like sitting before it kind of came back into your lap?
Black Label?
Yeah, when you opened for them on that with that other band. How much time had passed?
6-7 months.
So 7 months.
Yeah. It wasn't like the next day month later. It was a while. But it was just full circle. I was like, and then I didn't get the gig. So the third time, and then boom, I got the gig. And I had that gig for 3 years. And Zach just, man, something about that dude that is like such a learning experience with him. It's like, I know a lot, but I can also learn. And he taught me a lot of stuff.
You always have to be open to learn.
You do. And if you do.
At my level now, I'm learning.
You still learn.
I learn shit all the time or go on the road and I'll be like, no way.
Yeah, I think you even learn with singing. You're like, wow, I can actually not have to sing so hard every time.
Oh, God, that was, yeah. Yeah.
That's a.
Welcome to not blowing your voice out anymore.
Yeah, 101, right?
Right, number one thing.
And so when people say, you know, do you still practice? Like, I practice 9 hours a day for like 13, 14, 15 years of my life. Now I play like a half hour to an hour a day because I know what I need to practice. I know how to play drums. I just tweak some stuff. And if I want to work on something to better my craft, I'll work on it for 20 minutes, not burn myself out.
Sure.
And I think the more mature we get, the faster shortcuts we take to get the job done quicker.
That's Exodus 101. We study what we have to, and if you should know it by now anyway.
You should know it by now.
So it's like if you don't take a brush up, and the first sound check is going to be we're going to go over the two that are spotty and first night.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome to the show.
And all these gigs, like Breaking Benjamin, I think I had 3 days to do a whole tour. Then I had Black Label. I had 2 days, and we did a whole 3-month run. And then who else? Black Star Riders. I had 2 days, and I never met the guy. I mean, I met him because I played with him in Black Label,
right?
Opening up
on another show
with Judas Priest. And then the full circle of that is recently, or last year, it was Black Star Riders, Saxon, Judas Priest.
I was there.
I'm in the band.
I was there. So, wow, it's great.
You know,
I love it.
I like to have those stories to give back to the community and to the starving artists to say, if I can do it, you can do it. If you want to win the Powerball, you just got to go and get the ticket. Yeah,
exactly. Talk about the writing with Zach on that record, because you played on an album with
Catacombs.
You did Catacombs, and talk about, you know, actually getting in the studio and writing with him. You know, what was that experience like for yourself? And I mean, you were just saying you learned so much from him. Talk about some of those things that you learned. I mean,
I don't really get starstruck by any means. I think we're all the same
good,
people.
I don't either.
I'm not like, I can't get a picture.
I played with everybody, so it's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen everybody. So, playing with Zach, he's just a normal dude, and him and I just bust on each other all the time. And these people that are like worshiping Zach, and he'll do these bits where he does a guitar solo, and they'll tape it, and he'll watch it every single night to make sure it's perfect and what he needs to do better. That's how, like, he's still a pro. And he'll go, Chad, you want to watch my guitar solo? I'm like, nah, street lights are on. It's past my bedtime. I need to go feed the hog, right, exactly. You know, like the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Exactly.
There's people that would give their arm to just hang out with him just to say, you want to see my guitar solo? Right, and I'm like, I don't care about your guitar solo.
We take for granted sometimes the presence of the people we get to hang out
sometimes
with.
Sometimes I have to put myself in check when I'm sending him a message and going, happy birthday. I bought you Skype lessons for your present. I mean, like, I'm saying that to an icon.
To a guy who's
so that's the cool thing about Zach. Zach is not an arrogant dude where he has to tell you he's good at guitar. He doesn't need to tell you. But he's one of those guys that is such a pleasure to be around. So when we did the studio stuff, we didn't have a song. He might have had a couple riffs. He just starts hitting record and goes, all right, here's the riff. This is the chorus. This, all right, and we're jam it once, record. And you're like, and you're playing with an icon, so you can't be short end of the stick on that one. You got to pull your weight and really be like, that's why I hired this guy. And I've never been so complimented by a person that doesn't have to compliment than more than Zach. Every day, you're killing it, bro. You're killing it. You're killing it. You sound amazing. And when you hear that from that kind of guy, you'll do anything. You will go through, you know, through the fire for that guy. And that's why we're still friends to this day.
That's great.
I support him as he supports my
band. So if something ever happened that he needed a fill-in drummer, you could go back and do it, right?
Oh, and I mean, I do miss it. Just not the whole, like, biker of me and the long hair and all that, but just the camaraderie and just your bros.
I get that.
You know?
I get that. Now, let's come to the current band, Black Star Riders. Those of you all know who they are. It's Scott Garam of Thin Lizzy. And for me, Black Star Riders, those of you all know who they are. It's Scott Garam of Thin Lizzy. And for me, I would be on
enough
stage
said,
with him
right?
every night just looking over at him going, history. Because guys like myself, I worship Phil Lynott. You know what I mean? And also getting to play alongside of Ricky Warwick, who's an Irish powerhouse. And I remember one of his first, I think it might have been his first band, The Almighty, from the 80s back in the day, which wasn't, they were in all the metal magazines, but they weren't necessarily.
They weren't underground.
They were underground, but they got some run under there. But I think that, and they were, and actually, they went by Thin Lizzy for a few years. They actually were kept, Scott kept the name up as it.
He did it for many years. Ricky's, from what I've been told, Scott's been friends with him for 18 years.
Really?
And here's an iconic band that all musicians know, like King's X.
Yeah,
you
sure.
You respect them.
Yeah.
Scott was saying that, like, he could have picked anybody to sing and play bass too. He could have been picking anybody he wanted. And he said something about Ricky's voice just spoke to him. And Ricky's lyrics are so profound and they're dark. And like, I'm when I'm doing my audition and I'm learning the songs and then I'm playing with the band, I go, I'm your drummer, so tell me what this song's about.
Right.
Because I want to play it that way to make it have that feel. And I go, Dancing with the Wrong Girl. And I go, it's like surfy. It's like poppy-ish. And he goes, yeah, it's about doing heroin. I'm like, well, I wouldn't expect that one.
Wow.
Or a song called Charlie is about Charles Manson.
Uh-huh.
But the way he does it, where he can take a positive and make it a negative and take a negative and make, like, for instance, your band, you're going to hell, right? But you're a nice guy.
Yeah, well, I think it's a lot of it goes into this character we perceive, you know, as
absolutely.
In, you know what I mean? As the writer, as the Zetro, as the singer, there's that character that, you know, that loves the darkness. I mean, look at my set. It's all horror and darkness and stuff, even though regardless, I think that I come off different. I get a lot of all the time, people will that know me from other forms of life see me on stage or see something that I'm like, this is not the person I see every day in the gym or walking down the street walking.
Yeah, it's like you turn it on and like Michael Jackson, you're like,
exactly.
It's he doesn't like even this, talk in interviews and he's like,
exactly. You know? All of a sudden on stage, it's this, are we ready to rip each other's fucking head off? You know what I mean?
So yeah, it's, you know, it's entertainment.
It's a persona, I guess.
That's your uniform.
Right, and you know, you try not to move too hard from it. And I think if you have that, like Ricky carries it very, very well. You have this, like you said, persona that you are, and people know this entity and idea, and you know what you're going to expect from this guy.
Yeah.
I had a roadie tell me, a tech that worked for us, I said, you know, there's a lot of singers that don't talk in between songs. I talk a lot on stage.
It's good, though.
And he, I said, I go, I was crying about it, but I go, can't we just run through, click them off 10 in a row? And the guy goes, you know what, though, bro? He goes, you know what's great about it? Is I'm always anticipated to see what you're going to say next.
Right.
You know what I
you're
mean?
Like the and Howard Stern of metal.
I never thought of it like that, kind of. I never thought of it, you know. You know, there's a lot of times where I'll, like, you know, I'll, if something goes wrong with a drum set or he busts a snare or some shit like that. No, thank you.
I'm going to sing your breast things.
Kool-Aid and smoking weed. I like it like that. I'm up there and I'll talk to him and I'll, you know, hey, what's up? So you guys smoking weed in that living game? Well, throw it up here.
Personal.
I get in the zone kind of like with it. And it's like, I forget that I'm like there. And so, I mean, it made sense when he said that. He goes, I'm just, you know, I'm always excited to see what's he going to say. What's going to
I think that's great about you too.
I think that creates a part of the show.
Of being who you are in real life is who you are on stage. You don't have like this and this.
No, it's
and
genuine.
It's very genuine.
It's very genuine.
And that's what people see about you. I can see that now. Like, you being on stage, and I've been watching stuff on YouTube, and how you interact with the crowd, they feel a part. They're not just spending money to come and see.
And
you're like, bow down to me, worms.
I definitely make
you make them feel like they're on stage.
You are.
And that's rock star.
You're the whole reason we're here. If you're not here, I'm not here.
Amen to that.
So now you actually wrote a record with Black Star Riders, and talk about the writing process working with Ricky and Scotty, because, I mean, I'm even curious, Scott Gorham, you get to write songs with fucking Scott Gorham.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
It's insane. Again, back to the Breaking Benjamin. That was the part of my success of being on Jay Leno, selling that many records. But playing with Zach and playing with Scott and Ricky and all them, these are icons. These are like the reason why I do what I do. You know, the success of selling 20 million records, no one does it anymore.
No, they don't.
Yeah, but when you're playing a show and everyone's like, Scott's in the band, I'm coming. You know? And you're like, I really like you. Scott doesn't even know your band. I like your band.
Right.
But you want to see Scott, of course.
Right, of course.
So
all of us.
He breaks the ice in so many scenarios. Same with Ricky. But we had Damon Johnson at the time playing guitar with us. Super talented cat. And he was in Brothers Kane, played guitar for Alice Cooper. So he knew the hired gun spot. But he wanted to kind of do his own thing. I mean, it's on his. I guess every musician wants to do a solo record and do stuff that they want to make their own schedule. And he has a family, and we were touring a lot, and he wanted to be home more. So he can make his own decisions. I want to go on tour for a month. I can go on tour. No one's telling me I have to go on tour. So he kind of did his own thing. We brought in a guy named Christian Matatucci from Stone Sour. So Corey was kind enough for us to use him while Slipknot's doing their thing. Corey comes to us and has a bunch of riffs and stuff, and him and Ricky get together, and they send me stuff, and they're like, what do you think about it? And I'm like, sounds pretty good. We do pre-pro with Jay Russian, which is an awesome producer who did, like, Steel Panther and stuff like that.
Fun stuff.
Stone Sour. And
stuff that's going on today. You know what I mean? Stuff
yes.
That's like definitely updated. You know, guys with their, you know, with his ear to the grindstone.
Absolutely. And so we did the record together, and it was just probably one of my best experiences of ever doing a record together as a band. Not doing the drums, playing live, and then everyone's doing their parts. We all played together in the same room. And if there were parts that we liked, we would keep for guitars or whatever, or they would go after I was doing the drums. But we wanted that. He wanted to create a Guns N' Roses, like Appetite for Destruction, like raw. Right. Don't worry about the click. Don't worry about playing everything. So I want attitude. Yeah, I want right. no more Pro Tools.
Sure.
You're off the click a millisecond, so I'm going to move it here because that's not music. Let's call it how it is, right? So it's rock and roll, and rock and roll is about aggression.
Should be raw.
Raw as it can possibly get, like my VHS tape.
See?
And
success.
Then, so we did it really quick and it was painless. But every time I would do a drum track, if it was one or two takes, Scott would be playing and he would mess up the beat ending of a part and be like, damn it! And I'm like, I'm recording for me, dude. So I would have to redo the song. And it was like I'm yelling at this guy who boys are back in town, for God's sake. And that's kind of how it is, where it's like Scott is my dad in a bad way of saying it. I respect him as he respects me.
I think he's old enough he could be your dad.
He's 68, yeah.
And yeah, he could be.
He jokes a lot with me a lot. And, you know, all the guys being a little bit older than me. And I go, well, I decide if you get applesauce or pea soup in your nursing home, so you better behave.
Right, exactly.
Right?
You're the final.
I'm the one that's going to do the helicopter one, right? Or just
yeah, right.
throw
I
it in your mouth.
I love the helicopter.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's great.
Yeah, so, but they all have a great sense of humor. And the good thing about being with this band, they're all a super group is really what the band is. You got Stone Sour, Breaking Benjamin, Black Label, Adrenaline Mob, whatever, for me. Rat with Robbie Crane and Vince Neil. Ricky from The Almighty, and obviously Scott Gorham from... So you're putting all these big, big...
Heavy hitters.
Heavy hitters, yeah.
That's heavy hitters.
And
you're a heavy hitter, Chad. You played when you hit... When your name is on the poster, way above everybody, above people that were your heroes.
I know, right?
You made... I know this. Believe me. I've experienced this, and I talk about it. Some of my heroes open for me. You know, they're not even...
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
I remember being played at WMS a long, long, long time ago in Cleveland. And they played, which our band was called Short Bus. We didn't have a record deal, but just to hear us on the radio the first time ever was the cool. I'm cranking it up in the stereo. And they said this, that Kiss opened up for Blue Oyster Cult. Now Blue Oyster Cult opens up for Kiss. You just never know. That's why you always got to be cool to the people you play with or your techs, because the techs are the ones that will get you gigs. Yeah, this dude just got canned.
They know everything.
You treat them with respect. Exactly.
The pulse is they're on the pulse.
They're always constantly working.
This is how gigs. This is how they're the road sluts of the world.
And we should just write a book about the formulas, do's and the don'ts.
There's a million. There should be. You know what I mean? There should be. So, what are you guys doing now?
So we're on.
You were obviously at NAMM show this week, Les.
Yeah, I got that.
Lucky you. I've skipped it this year.
I hate my craft when I go there.
Ooh.
It's like cattle falling down the hill.
Why do we all cringe when we walk through? Why does every fan in the world love the hell out of it? And every one of us are like, oh, God, I got
to
walk
I think to you and I, of doing it for so long, it's a reunion. Seeing some cool people that I haven't
That's
seen
all
in a while.
It is for me,
That's cool. But when I go in there and everyone's shedding and playing all their licks like they practiced in their basement all summer long, can't wait to show it off in winter and try to get an endorsement.
I know.
I can't do it.
See, what's good about me is singers don't get endorsed by anything.
No, yeah.
I don't have anything.
A microphone? If
and
that...
are you sure? And they don't endorse anybody. You pay full price. Metallica pays full price for
I'm going to
sure.
change that because my Zetro. Bro works for them.
Really?
So,
well,
yeah.
You tell me call Zetro. Actually... I didn't get the. They didn't. I have a really high end, and I didn't pay what most of them pay. I actually went to the factory in Nashville where they do. You know, they have two outlets. I did went to Nashville and bought it. But I mean, it's the best sounding mic for me. But I don't need picks, strings, sticks, skins, drum heads.
It'd be nice though to just have them.
I guess it's stuff to sell, right?
I always say this to singers. I go. Yeah, you don't get microphones and this and that, but you sure get publishing.
Yes, we do.
So that makes up for drums, yes, trust me.
We get publishing. That's right. Just got a couple of flowing in last week.
There you go.
It's that time. Always after like the first of the year, right after like 3 weeks.
It's the first of the month. So catch.
And I've written for a few other metal bands that pay quite well. So it's really
cool. That's what Richard Marx does now, dude. Like
he's always done that.
He came to my. Here's two cool stories. So being in Breaking Benjamin, you're more in the gravy train.
Oh,
level.
Come on. I know this. I know.
Right.
I know where the good dressing rooms are. I never get those. I get the dressing rooms, but I never get the good ones at the festival.
So when you get to that level, you don't know who's coming to your show. Like, I met Roger Clemens and Tiger Woods the same day, and Roger's talking about going back to the game, and then he does, and I witnessed that.
Wow.
Right?
Tiger, so you can't buy that. You can't get that at a regular job.
Tiger Woods,
job.
I meet him, and then a week later, he gets busted with all that crap, and I wish I was in a time machine and be like,
amazing.
Yo, here's the deal. Stuff's going to hit the fan. You might not want to go down that route.
Don't fuck the girl at Waffle House, whatever you do.
Yeah, exactly. So the coolest people I've met and their sons are fans of Breaking Benjamin. Richard Marx comes to the show. He's like, you guys sounded great. And the only time I was starstruck, I'm not going to lie, was Bruce Springsteen. He came to our show in Jersey in a Range Rover in the secret compartment of the arena. You know, like Bruce Springsteen's coming in. The boss is coming. That's what I heard on the radio on our text. And I was like, the boss? Like, Bruce Springsteen's coming to our show? Yeah, okay. He is sitting with my wife just dancing to our music because she videoed him. And we go backstage. He goes, you. And I go, who, me? He goes, you're a motherfucker. And I was like, can you tell my boss that? Just make sure he knows that. And for the boss to tell me that, I could die and go to heaven.
Yeah,
and be
sure.
Happy, man.
Sure you can. What a great
guy. And he was such a great guy. Like, that's awesome. No rock star. And that makes me love my craft. Is when you see cool people that do what we do and make us look good. Not the ones that put the gum on the table, underneath the table, and go, well, you can't chew gum in high school anymore because some idiot over there wrecked it for you.
Exactly. Like, right.
So it's those stories where it's like, man, we're not all like that.
That's neat.
But yeah, Bruce was super, super
cool.
How cool.
So what are you doing now? What's going on with the talk about what's are we Black Star Rider new album? Are we going to tour? Are we got something lined up?
Yeah, that record's doing pretty well. It went number one in the UK, which was huge for us, and it beat my old band Breaking Benjamin. So I was all for that.
In the UK,
and just in only in the UK, yeah, well, I can't.
You have to take the small battles, hang in.
Take a battle.
Take them.
But. I'm with this band called Walking with Lions that I've been putting together with my bro Kevin in L.A. Tour from L.A., the guitar players in Minnesota, which is our guitar tech of Black Star Riders, which is weird.
And it's not, though.
It isn't.
There's so many guys.
But it does happen that way, yeah. And it's called Walking with Lions, and we're going to be recording all our songs next month and try to tour it while I'm on downtime.
So now are you... in L.A. for right now to be writing?
No, I did it. I just came
for an air. Northern California, so
I am.
This is just a visiting kind of a thing.
Yeah, this is just to go to NAMM. I signed a new deal with Paiste Cymbals.
Oh, nice.
With Zildjian, so I basically went to NAMM.
You left Zildjian and went to Paiste?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I don't know.
Zildjian didn't like that, did they?
No.
Yeah, wow.
When I've been with them for 15 years. But Stuart Copeland's my guy. And he was a Paiste guy. And I mean, Charlie Benante, and the list goes on and on, right? So they have an iconic sound that I've been trying to find for many years, and I was blessed for them to endorse me. So I went to NAMM for that purpose.
That's
and then
good.
We actually were writing some stuff, got a practice spot right before I was flying out to my bro's Eric's house.
So talk about your endorsements. Talk about who tell them.
Oh,
let
boy.
Everybody know who you got.
I'm gonna sound like a concubine here.
I don't care. I don't care. Like, this is your time. There's,
well, I greatly
right over there. Tell
this.
Them right there.
So I endorse Tama Drums, Vic First Sticks, Evans Drumheads, Paiste Cymbals, a company called Sawtooth, which you should check out. They're a really good company. They do like all the internet for Walmart and Amazon, and really? They do like percussion, guitars, microphone, you name it. But those are the corporations you want to get into because you can build them, and you're at the top of the food chain. Sure. You know what I'm saying? So they're really cool. I went for them too. Man, then the list goes on out of drums, like Simpad, Kickport, for the kick drum heads, for the kick drum. And then I have like Sullen Clothing, Blackfly, sunglasses.
All about it. Talk them all about them.
Power Sell Balance it. Bracelets.
There you go. Sell it, baby. I know how it works.
It's
sell it, sell
so
it,
sad it. That I have so many and That's, I can't
no,
remember.
It's not sad. It's not sad because you know what? It works hand in hand. Do you understand?
No, it absolutely does.
It works
does.
Hand in hand.
Absolutely
you
does.
You know what I mean? You, the people that are that you know, you're their hero. They want to see what you're wearing, what you're going on, and that creates a big, you know.
You're promoting them
like
as
you.
They promote
damn
you.
Damn right
Absolutely.
You are. You damn. There's nothing wrong with that. That's how that's called economy, and that's how it works. You
Very
know?
True.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It ain't a bad word at all.
Yeah. So yeah. So, and then like over the years, you know, other companies. Like I hit this company called Get Grinds, and I saw them on Shark Tank. I'm like the John Tempesta. I just started calling. I go, hey. I can promote this. I need this caffeine pouch that you can swallow while I'm playing drums and feel alive. And it has like vitamin B12.
Really?
And it was on Shark Tank. And they're like, yeah, we'll send you a couple of things. Dude, they sent me boxes.
Yeah, sure they did.
Like boxes. And I went and gave it to people. They're like, man, this... Because people that dip and trying to get out of it, it's kind of like the chance of...
And it's actually just... Coffee.
Just coffee grounds. And so I was dipping caramel macchiato. That really sounds rock star.
He's dipping caramel macchiatos on stage. Wow. Yeah. I can't dip. Although I was watching Philip from Pantera. They just came through with Slayer. He does
oh, yeah.
someone. And he was chewing gum and singing the whole time.
I don't know how you would
the
do
fuck
that.
Do you do that?
I don't know how you would do that.
Where do you put it? Like that? I don't
know. Now, let me ask you some questions. Okay. When you sing... You get cotton mouth a lot.
Only if I smoke a shitload of weed. And I usually do. But you know what? I'll tell you something. Because I talk to the crowd right after the song's done, I hardly drink water during the set because I feel like if you turn around and you drink a drink of water and the other guys
you
are
lost
turning,
the engagement.
That the show's... It's, you've
wow,
left
you're
the show
in it
down.
To win it.
So I just... So,
you're like Braveheart, Sam.
Don't believe me. So it's like, there's times up there, it's like... I've got seven songs, and I'm like...
You're like me,
somebody's got
me,
lemons in the crowd, and I'm like...
You're like me and myself and Irene, where you're just like...
Oh, totally. Exactly. It's like, you know, and a lot of times, because I do smoke weed all day, and everyone knows that, and like it's sitting here right here, is my new... My I love Rick and Morty, right? Rick Pipe. And sometimes I got to go, I got to go on in an hour. And, you know, it's like, again, I don't never want the show to mm-hmm. stop. So if we're running three songs and then the next song is guitar change or maybe it's three really thrashy songs and Tom may need a break to
stop,
to take a drink, you know, because he's just been pounding the shit. Then it's my turn then to turn around and drink or during the song to stop and drink. Is you're not performing. You just stop performing to do that. There's going to be somebody in my eyes that is fixated on you the whole time, regardless if it's
Absolutely.
One person or many.
Absolutely.
So every action that you're on stage, you need to be performing the whole time. So believe me, I'm very, but it's a good brave heart. That's a great way to look at it.
Because you're in battle, dude.
The
That's,
way I look at it is, that,
you're in it.
Check
I mean,
it out.
I got to drink water.
When
sometimes.
The fucking, when the thing clicks and it starts, you when the show starts,
yep.
the game is now on and the clock is ticking. And so now it's like, I need to win the game. To win the game, I got to know when the timeouts are, when all that is. So.
And, you're winning new Exodus fans
oh,
every
so. Yeah,
show.
Definitely.
So it's not like, oh, I've seen that dude. I'll just kind of half-ass it. It's
yeah,
like,
sure, no.
There's some people that have never seen you, so your first impression's everything. So it's like, oh.
And then the thing is I also... I mean, as a singer, and I think that you should look into the crowd, and that should be your focal point.
Hands down.
My raps in between songs are not necessarily scripted, so it's the same thing every night. It's like I may see something that they did, and after the
improv, right?
Even though I'm supposed to say it right here, I go, All right, check it out. We're good seeing you. We're good being here. Hey, you motherfuckers down there. You guys, I love you to death. But if somebody fucking falls down, you just pick them up. I don't need no melees going on out there. You're just shit like that. So,
and that's a lot of talking. Like,
believe me.
You know, I teach drum lessons, and I do like Skype and all that. And I talk for like an hour. I'm like, and your voice starts going.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because we just did 70,000 tons of metal, the cruise. And we've had to play the first night, but then again, we ended the whole cruise the last night at 12:30. So I had 2 days in between, and because I'm talking to everybody, because you're on a goddamn ship, you got nowhere to go.
You can't stop. You're
walking down the promenade, and you know they know who you are. You know what I mean? You may not know who they are, but they know who you are. So I don't like to be a rude guy. I've never been rude.
That's awesome.
I want to be good to my fans. They're good to me. They've kept me relevant in metal for all these years. I owe them that, and I've always been there. Besides, that's not my character in the first place, and anybody who's met me knows that. If you walk up to me on the street or you see me at a concert, I'm cool about it. Hey, I'll sign anything. I'll take pictures.
And that is cool.
Most of my band is that. All of my band is that way, very much approachable, and it creates such a great thing for the fans.
They'll do anything.
And they will. So I've always felt that that's kind of the way to be. You know what I mean? And never take that for granted.
Your
I never
fan base
do.
Is
I never
your
have.
Army.
I never. They're your cheering section.
They are. And they will stick up for your band name to the day they die.
They will.
You know?
Well, hey, man. It's been great having you in
Thank
the
you.
Vault. This is going to make for a great, I'm sure, few episodes. We love that. And all of the fans that watch my show on YouTube they love this kind of stuff. They love the fact
awesome.
That we get the musicians in and we dig deep with them.
Yeah, there's
you know what I mean?
No
there's
politics this, in it.
No, it's all a good time and it's all cuff. A good, basically it's a conversation that you and I are having.
Interview
chatting.
I've had in a long time. Because you get the dumb ones. So if you were a jelly donut, or if you could be any donut, what would it be? And I'm like, why are you asking me these things for
interviews?
No.
This is the one that ends it with anybody in Exodus. So, Zetro, did Kirk Hammett really play in Exodus? People still ask that to this day. And Gary will end it. If you ask that question to Gary Holt, interview is now immediately over. I'm a little bit more cordial, and I'll say, everyone knows that. Do you really want to go there? So, it's just one of those things, but have you back in when Black Star Riders get more shit coming around? Are you guys coming around the bear? Can I get you back in the vault?
I would love to be on it. I would love to get
Tell
the guys.
Tell everybody where they can get your social media, anything where they can check you out. Yeah. If they want to go and see your drum, talk about your drum Skype lessons, any of that. Tell them where they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, thank you. So just go to Facebook and type in Chad Zeliga, Szeli, get attention. And if you need to email me about drum lessons, it's Chad Zeliga at Gmail.
We'll put the graphics up right here as well. So
yep, cool. And you can see me on Instagram. Hit me up on that. YouTube, just Chad Zeliga. It's pretty easy. If you can pronounce the last name right, that's a nightmare, but that's a whole nother story. And, you know, Black Star Riders, just blackstarriders.com. Walk In With Lions, you can go on our Facebook. We'll be having stuff up very soon for that. And just stay in touch. And
yeah, I mean,
thank
you
so much.
Another great drummer that we were very fortunate to have in, and be able to tell you guys, the fans, that you know you don't get in a magazine or radio. You're not going to get this type of an interview.
You get that much of a.
That's exactly. You know. That's why I there's no time limit here. If it takes 2-3 hours, it takes me 4 episodes to keep you guys. I cliffhanger them all. I'll cut them off
like a Breaking Bad.
Tomorrow, to be continued.
Yes.
And that's like some people said, oh man, I was waiting for the next part. Well, you wait till tomorrow, we'll share it. So
that's awesome.
Thank you so much
for
having me.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. You guys,
best wishes.
Sure, you leave me comments because I want to know what you think about this guy. I wonder what you guys would think about interviews like this. Obviously, share my page and sign up. You got to subscribe to my channel. And we will see all of you very soon in Zetro's Toxic Vault.